बंदे रूप सनातन रघुजग श्री जीव गोपाल को।
सो इन द फिफ्थ चैप्टर वी सी दैट नारद मुनि गोस एंड इन्फॉर्म्स लॉर्ड शिवा about whatever has happened in Daksha sacrificial arena and about the death of his beloved wife Sati. So Shiva becomes extremely angry. He just plucks out a hair from his head and throws it on the ground, and Virabhadra manifests, very ferocious form. And Shiva orders Virabhadra, you go and kill Daksha and destroy his sacrificial arena. Then Virabhadra circumambulated Shiva. He considered himself capable of coping up with any power against him. I have the blessings of Shiva, and the purpose of my appearance is to fulfill this mission of destroying the sacrificial arena of Daksha. So I'll do the needful. So he just went. Then Virabhadra and so many of the associates of Lord Shiva, they approached the sacrificial arena of Daksha. And they were making a thundering sound with their foot ornaments. They were coming, and a huge dust storm raised. And all the people in Daksha sacrificial arena, especially Prasuti and other ladies, so they were thinking, where is this dust storm coming from? So suddenly, what is this thunder? Then at that time, they thought that it could be the result of Daksha's sinful activities. So Daksha's sin is, he offended Lord Shiva, and he also did not stop the death of Shiva's wife, Sati. So because of all his sinful activities, we are going to experience something dangerous now. Everybody was anxious. So at that time, they also say that Shiva dances at the time of dissolution. How can anyone have good fortune after angering Lord Shiva? So Daksha himself also started seeing many evil omens, and Virabhadra and all his associates, they surrounded the sacrificial arena, they entered there, they destroyed the pillars there, and they entered women's chambers also, they entered the assembly hall, they contaminated the area by passing urine stool like that, and they blocked the way of all the sages. Sages started running away. Suddenly these demonic people came. So they were running away, but just blocked the way. And they arrested the demigods. And Maniman tied up Bhrugu, Daksha, Pusha and Bhaga. All the priests started dispersing in fear of their lives. Fear for their lives. Then Virabhadra tore off Bhrugu's mustache, broke Pusha's teeth and plugged out Bhaga's eyes. Because all of them have done something in relation to these senses. So we'll see it a little later. Virabhadra killed Daksha by chopping his head with an axe. And he just threw that head of Daksha in the sacrificial fire, and then he left the body there and he ran and he went away. So he went to Kailash. So everybody was very astonished and bewildered to see this ghastly incident. The death of Daksha, the main personality in the sacrifice, who is the conductor of the sacrifice. So everybody went to Brahmaji. They requested Brahma, all the priests and demigods and all the guests and whoever is present in the sacrificial arena, alive, with their limbs functioning still. So they went to report to Brahmaji. So Brahmaji said that myself and Vishnu understood that something like this is going to happen there. That's why we didn't attend the sacrifice. So we didn't accept your invitation. So if you offend such a great personality like Lord Shiva, what else are you going to expect? You can't expect happiness by offending a great personality. So Shiva is very exalted. You all should go and please Lord Shiva, pacify him with pure heart. And he was especially sorry because of losing Sati, his beloved wife. So when he personally was insulted by Daksha, actually Shiva tolerated at that time. He silently went. But when his wife died, so he could not tolerate that. He punished the people who are the cause. So tolerance has a certain threshold. You cannot expect unlimited tolerance from everybody all the time, right? So we cannot expect forgiveness for one's mistakes all the time. So sometimes we have to expect punishment also, right? So any embodied being do not know how powerful Lord Shiva is. So Brahmaji wanted to make the universal situation little more sober and pleasant. So he took all these demigods and went to Kailasha. So in this context, Maitreya Muni describes the details of Kailasha hill. So when they were going, they were passing through this Kailasha mountain, and the mountain has so many aushadhis, herbs, and Vedic hymns are being chanted. You can see some sages here and there sitting and doing mystic yoga. There were so many valuable gems and minerals, waterfalls, beautiful caves. Peacocks were making beautiful sounds. There were tall trees and elephants, flower-bearing trees, fruit-bearing trees, pious trees. Pious trees are those trees that can give flowers and fruits. Impious trees are those trees that cannot give flowers and fruits, or they could have some poisonous effects also. They cannot even give shadow. They are impious trees. Impious trees are compared to people who are not charitable. In the 5th canto, 14th chapter. So flowers and lakes, lakes are full of various kinds of birds, and there are varieties of deer. Kailasha hill is surrounded by rivers called Alakananda. So these rivers were auspicious because Lord Shiva bathed there, Sati bathed there. So because of the bathing of Sati, the rivers also became auspicious. Generally rivers purify people, but when exalted personalities bathe in rivers, they purify the rivers also. So when Bhagiratha, he requested Gangaji to descend on this earthly planet, Ganga asked two things. If I come with my force, who will bear my force? I can even pierce your Bhumandala and then go to Patal Lok also. Who can bear my force? Then Bhagiratha said, I will request Lord Shiva to do that. Then second, she asked, if I come as a river there, people will bathe in me and dump all their sins in my waters. Who will protect me from that? Right? So then Bhagiratha says that when pure devotees bathe in your waters, all the sins that are accumulated in you because of the bathing of sinful people will also be counteracted. Don't worry. So sages will purify the contamination of sinful people that is dumped in holy waters also. So holy men purify holy places and holy rivers also. So then, outside the city where Nanda and Alakananda and wives of devatas sometimes enter those rivers, after their enjoyment they were fatigued and then they enter the rivers and take bath there. Thus their bodies also become fragrant and yellowish. Alaka was filled with many beautiful airplanes. This is the area of Alaka region, Alakapuri. So demigods pass through that region to go to Kuvera. The fragrance of the sandalwood trees are agitating the damsels, and they develop some desires to enjoy also. When there is a nice ambience, people who are inclined for sense gratification see that as a facility for sense gratification. People who are inclined to do bhajan, they see that as a facility for bhajan. Right? When materialists enter a nice garden or park, they feel like doing sense gratification. When devotees enter a nice garden or park, they feel like a peaceful place, let me chant. Like that. So demigods also enter this Alakapuri region and they are distracted or attracted or excited by the peaceful ambience there, and they feel like doing sense gratification. There were many bathing ghats also with steps made of Vaidurya Mani. So, like that, passing through these regions of Kailasha hill and Alakapuri, all the demigods and sages along with Brahma reach the place where Shiva was sitting. So Shiva was sitting under a banyan tree, and the banyan tree was 100 yojanas high, and Shiva was very grave, and he seemed to have given up his anger. Now he is little more sober after the whole incident, and he was surrounded by great personalities like the four Kumaras and Kubera and also Narada Muni. Like that, so many exalted personalities were sitting So Shiva is in is in perfection of his vidya, tapa and yoga. He was performing austerities for the benefit of the whole world. His attire is like this. He wore a deer skin, matted hair, and he had a staff, and his reddish body was smeared with ashes, and he has a symbol of a moon on his hairs, and on a kusha mat he was sitting amongst sages who were listening to him. He was giving some discourses. He was in Tarka Mudra. So something like this, you can see some, I don't know. So on a kusha mat he was sitting and then giving discourses on absolute truth, and all the sages including Narada Muni were listening to him. So he was sitting in Virasana. So Virasana means his left leg was on his right thigh and his left hand was on the thigh, and in his right hand he is holding Rudraksha beads and showing Tarka Mudra. You can see this painting. So this is Tarka Mudra. This is what is called Virasana. So demigods and sages offered respects to the Lord and Lord Shiva. So although Shiva is so exalted, and all these people had a work with Lord Shiva and then they came to request Shiva for some favor, still Shiva was humble enough to get up from his seat and offer respects to Lord Brahmaji and receive all these people with proper manner, right? So, and other sages also bowed down to Brahmaji in respect there. And sages offered respects to Brahma, and after being worshipped like that, Brahmaji started speaking to Lord Shiva. He offered certain prayers. He offered praises to Lord Shiva. So, in this context, Shiva is praised by Brahmaji like as if he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? You are the creator, maintainer, destroyer, you are Supreme Brahman, all these words come. So, we need to understand this in a certain way. Not only in this context, when during the Samudra Manthan episode, all the demigods, headed by Lord Ajita also, Supreme Lord was also there, all of them go to Lord Shiva. Why? Because during the Samudra Manthan, Halahal came and the entire universe, it's spreading throughout the universe. So, demigods wanted protection. They requested Shiva, please protect us from this predicament. So, in that context also they glorify Shiva as if he is the Supreme Lord. Sometimes Brahmaji is glorified as if he is the Supreme Lord. Sometimes demigods go to Brahmaji and then request him for some benediction or some support. For example, when Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu entered the womb of Mother Diti, then also Brahmaji was approached by all these demigods. What is the cause of this darkness? Please give us a solution. At that time also they were glorifying Brahmaji. So sometimes demigods like Shiva and Brahma especially, they were glorified as if they were the Supreme Lords. So Prabhupada gives us an understanding how to actually understand this kind of glorification. He says that one needs to see that these demigods, Shiva or Brahma, they are the representatives of Krishna. Because they are representatives, sometimes they are glorified as good as Krishna. Coming to Shiva's case especially, Shiva is glorified as good as the Supreme Lord because in one sense they are not different, in purpose. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, he is untouched by Maya. However, sometimes there is a need to touch Maya for the universal creation. So, when Vishnu is not in touch with Maya, he is called Vishnu. But when Vishnu touches Maya, when he comes in touch with Maya, he becomes Shiva. So milk and yogurt are non-different. Kshiram yatha dati vikara vishesha yoga sanjayatena pratagasti heto yashambu tatam pitatam samupaiti karya. I forgot that verse. So basically there is no difference between milk and yogurt. But by adding little yogurt culture to the milk, milk will become yogurt. Right? In that sense, yogurt is also another form of milk. But yogurt cannot become milk again. Right? In that sense, Shiva is almost like the Supreme Lord, but he is not on the level of Vishnu Tattva. And he is not on the level of Jiva also, like Brahmaji. Brahmaji is Jiva. Vishnu is Vishnu, Vishnu Tattva, Supreme Lord. But Shiva is somewhere in the middle. Right? His Tattva is somewhere in the middle. So, because of all these reasons, and also Shiva is the Supreme Lord Vishnu only, who is acting for the purpose of creating this world and especially destroying this world. So for that reason, he may be sometimes glorified as if he is the Supreme Lord directly. Right? In that light, we need to understand this kind of glorification. So here Brahmaji is glorifying Shiva, that I know you are the Supreme Brahman. You are the controller of the universe. You are the father and mother of the universe, just as spider acts on its own web. And you have created the systems. You have created the systems of sacrifices. You have created the systems of Varnashram. So you have created sacrifices through Daksha for delivering, for deriving the benefits of Dharma and Artha. And you have created Varnashrama, which the Brahmanas follow with determination. Now, because you have created the system of sacrifice and Daksha is supposed to perform that sacrifice, if you kill Daksha, who will perform that sacrifice? Who will follow that Dharma? So please revive him. He is indicating like that. Why are you destroying the system that you only have created, inaugurated? And you ordain the destinations to different people, Swarga or liberation, Vaikuntha or impersonal Brahman. You offer it to pious people and you offer hell for impious people. So this, as I said, Krishna ultimately does it, but sometimes Krishna's representatives are also glorified like that. For example, Chief Minister's Secretary will come. Then you may glorify him or receive him as if he is the Chief Minister also sometimes. But still one cannot equate them. You cannot equate Brahma and Shiva. He cannot be equal to Vishnu and Shiva. Next, surrendered devotees do not become angry. Only animals become angry. How can you become angry on Daksha or any other people who must have offended or done some mischief? So you should not kill sinful people as they are already killed by the providence. Sadhus are compassionate to the materialists who are bewildered by Vishnu Maya. Sometimes by bewilderment of Vishnu Maya, they may sometimes offend the devotees also, but still sadhus are compassionate. So sadhus should not show prowess on such offenders because their karma will take care of them. So he is just doing the needful. Brahmaji is speaking few things so that Shiva could be pacified. So you are never bewildered by that Maya and are attached to that karma. So you are beyond the influence of Maya because the external energy of the Lord, Parvati or Sati or like Durga, is directly the wife of Lord Shiva, and Shiva is never captivated by her. So Shiva is beyond the influence of Maya. So to captivate Lord Shiva, the Supreme Lord had to manifest his internal potency in the form of Mohini Murti to just attract him. But Parvati is there right next to him. Parvati could not entice or captivate Lord Shiva. So Shiva is so exalted. So you cannot behave like this as if you are bewildered by Maya. So it's a circumstantial anger that is exhibited by Lord Shiva in the context where his wife was disrespected, neglected, and eventually died. So in that context he exhibited his anger. But otherwise Shiva's heart is filled with compassion. That he will also say, and Brahmaji is also reminding him. So, just like we have seen, Manu also was reminding Dhruva. So, you destroyed everything because the priests did not offer you the share of sacrifice. So, I have some requests. You can take your share in the sacrifice. Let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. And you also fulfill some of my requests. Let Bhaga get his eyes, because your Virabhadra pulled his eyes out. Let Bhrugu get his moustache. Let Pusha get his teeth. Let Daksha get his life back. So Daksha, Bhaga, Bhrugu and Pusha. These are like four main personalities who lost significantly in this whole fight. So there are so many other demigods also who were injured. So please let them recover by your grace. So he puts forth his requests. Then Lord Shiva says in the 7th chapter. He was pacified. He was already pacified earlier only. But after Brahmaji's words, because who is coming? Sometimes we may be requested by someone, but if the request is coming from a very exalted personality. He himself is coming and then asking us to do something or say something. So we are more obliged to him. So respecting Brahmaji, Shiva said, yes, I will do the needful. He fulfills the request of Brahmaji, but partially. So you can see here, first he says that I punished them only to correct them. Just like sometimes children do some mischief, the father may become strict with them or punish them. Like that I punished them. Otherwise I have absolutely no inimical feelings towards them. So as a merciful father, I corrected them only. Because they are childish and they are less intelligent. There are two types of punishment. That which a conqueror imposes upon an enemy. Number two, that which a father imposes upon a child. So Shiva's punishment is of the second category. Right? He did not act inimically, but he acted like a father who chastises and corrects the child. Now I will fulfill your request. He said, I will revive Daksha's life, let him have a goat head. Because he had the intelligence and words like a goat. Let him have a goat head. So Bhaga, let him see the portion of the sacrifice through Mitra's eyes. Bhaga's eyes were lost. Let him see through Mitra's eyes. Because his eyes were contaminated with fault, devoid of spiritual vision. I will bestow him the ability to see, but not personal eyes. He should share the eyes. Right? Like that. Sometimes we may be asking some facility, I need some, say, laptop. Yeah, you can use laptop, his laptop. You can work on this document through his laptop. Like that. Share the resource. Next, Pusha. So let Pusha lost his teeth. Let him chew through the teeth of his disciples or Daksha. Or when he is alone, he should eat chickpea dough if he is alone. He cannot bite things, then he can eat dough. So, why? Because he has shown his teeth at the devotees and laughed at them. Next, because he is not completely accepting the requests of Brahmaji also. He is only partially accepting. He is fulfilling the requests, but partially. Because a person who has done a very grievous mistake, he should also get some token punishment, if not complete punishment. Right? He gave some relaxations, he relaxed the punishment, but not completely. The demigods who agreed to give me share, let them have their limbs revived, because they did not side Daksha. So as because they are a part of the assembly, somehow they were affected, let them get revived. They did not do anything particularly mischievous. Then the priests and others let them work with the arms of Ashwini Kumaras and hands of Pusha, because they favored Daksha, raising their arms and shouting. And Bhrigu, let him have the mustache of a goat, because this Bhrigu is the chief advisor of Daksha. So that's how all these are mentioned in this page 58. So Shiva does just relax the punishments given to all these people. And everyone said, okay, whatever you have done is proper, appropriate. Sadhu, sadhu, they approved. And the demigods, sages, along with Shiva and Brahmaji, they all went to the sacrificial arena. And as according to the directions of Lord Shiva, Daksha was given a goat head. And Daksha just woke up as if he woke up from sleep. And his heart was cleansed like a lake cleansed by autumnal rains. That's what is mentioned here. So Daksha actually wanted to offer prayers, but because he remembered his beloved daughter Sati, who just gave up her body because of his own neglect, his voice got little choked up and his eyes were filled with tears. Still composing himself with a pacified mind, he began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. He said, my dear Lord Shiva, you have actually shown me mercy. You and Vishnu never neglect even Brahma Bandhus. How can you neglect me? I am engaged in sacrifices. By punishing me, you have been merciful towards me. You always protect the Brahmanas like a cowherd protects the cows with a stick. So protection also includes some kind of correction and little punishment if needed. So not knowing the truth about you, I insulted you. But still you did not take notice of my insult. But you compassionately punished me, and by that punishment I was saved from hell. I did not enter hell. So Daksha, after begging forgiveness from Shiva like this, he again commenced the sacrifice. So all the Brahmanas, to commence the sacrifice, they offered oblations called Puroshada, Purodesha oblations in the sacrifice. And they thus purified the sacrificial arena, which was contaminated by Virabhadra and his associates. So as soon as King Daksha offered clarified butter with Yajurveda mantras, Lord Hari appeared there on the back of Garuda. So he was having such a beautiful form, and 8 arms were there, and his form was described like this. Shyamo Hiranyarashanorka Kirita Jushto Neelalaka Bhramaramandita Kundalasyaha Shankhabja Chakra Sharacha Pagadasi Charma Vyaghair Hiranya Bhujair Hiranmaya Bhujair Yava Karnikaraha Shyamo Hiranya Rashanurka. Shyama means his complexion is black. Hiranya Rashanaha. Hiranya means gold. So he is wearing golden yellow garments. Hiranya Rashanaha. Arka Kirita Jushto. His crown is dazzling as the sun. This is a Vishnumurti form. Then Neelalaka Bhramara. His hair is bluish. Bhramara. Bhramara means bumblebees, black bees. So his hair is bluish or blackish like the bees, bees complexion. Mandita Kundalasyaha. His face is decorated with beautiful kundal, earrings. Shankhabja Chakra Sharachapa Gadasi Charma. His hands, his multiple hands were holding shankha. 8 hands were there. They were looking like 8 petals of lotus, and they were holding shankha, conch. Abja, lotus. Chakra, disc. Shankhabja Chakra Shara. Shara is this arrows. Shara, chapa means bow. Gada. Gada is club. Asi, the sword. Charma. Charma is the shield. Right? Shield and sword. So like that he was decorated. Shankhabja Chakra Sharachapa Gadasi Charma Vyaghrair Hiranmaya Bhujair Vyaghrair Hiranmaya Bhujair Iva Karnikaraha. So Iva Karnikara means his body is appearing like a blue lotus flower. So like that there are other verses also describing his beautiful form. So like that the Lord appeared, and he had a canopy over his head. Like the moon, see, this white one, this is like a moon, and he was being offered chamar. Who is holding the chamar, no one knows, but he was being offered chamar. So like that he was resplendent on the back of Garuda. So as soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods led by Brahma, Indra and Shiva immediately offered respects. They offered prayers. Everyone's luster faded in the presence of Lord's effulgence. When the most important personality enters the assembly, all other people automatically get into low profile. So fearful with awe and veneration and folding hands, they offered respects to the Lord. So the Lord's glories are unlimited, and they are beyond the mental comprehension of people in general and even the demigods. Name viduhu suraganaha prabhavam na maharshayaha hamadirhi devanam maharshi namcha sarvasaha. So it's not very easy to know the glories of the Lord completely. But still, by the mercy of the Lord, one is able to know the glories of the Lord to some extent. So with whatever knowledge of Lord's glories that is bestowed upon all these personalities, they started praising the Lord and offered prayers to the Lord. Apyargva vrittayo yasya mahitvatmam bhuvadeha yathamati granantisma kritanagraha vigraham. So this verse says that the ability to offer prayers to the Lord is also coming by His mercy. If one is not empowered by the Lord, they cannot offer prayers. A vivid example of this is Dhruva Maharaj. He was unable to offer prayers. Lord took the conch shell and touched him on his forehead, and he was able to offer prayers like that. So now Daksha began offering prayers. Now the rest of the chapter is mostly the prayers offered by several personalities in the sacrificial assembly of Daksha. You can see page number 60 to 63 of Subodhini. All these prayers are summarized and kept there. So many of the following prayers offered by various personalities of Daksha's sacrificial assembly, they consist praise of the Lord, but without sufficient understanding of His glories. Because many of them are not very pure devotees. Shiva is a pure devotee. Like that, there are few people who are offering devotional prayers, but other people do not have complete understanding. And there is a slight indirect criticism or blame of other people also. While offering prayer to the Lord, they are blaming these people. Right? However, acharyas present the real meaning of these prayers by positively interpreting them wherever necessary. So there, the comments are also given in the next. It's not yet covered, right? Okay. So we can just take this overview only. Maybe we will read one or two prayers, not more. So Daksha is offering this prayer. My dear Lord, you are pure, Shuddham, Swadhamni. You are situated in your spiritual abode. You are transcendental to all speculative positions. You are completely spiritual. You are one without a second. You are fearless. You are controller of Maya. You are unaffected by Maya, etc., etc. He glorifies the Lord in various ways. Through that glorification, he also slightly indicates, O Lord Vishnu, you alone are the Lord and take the coverings of knowledge, and others taking coverings of ignorance like Shiva, though playing human roles, do not know how to act. Still, although he begged forgiveness from Shiva and then offered prayers to Shiva, there are still some traces of contempt in Daksha's heart. Because of that, he offended Narada Muni also in the next birth. Right? Because of that, he got a degraded birth also. He is a Brahmana in this birth, son of Brahma. Later, he became a Kshatriya as a son of Prachetas. Right? So there is a slight degree of criticism in his prayer. So, priests also said, because of Nandi's curse, we are absorbed in karma and do not know the truth about you. If you do not know, how can Daksha know you? The glance on Daksha were offering this prayer, priests. So like that, different people offer different prayers. You can go through them. In an overview class, we won't be able to cover all this. And Vidyadharas, they say, a materially absorbed person can reject the illusion by hearing Krishna Katha. This is like one nice prayer. They glorify Krishna Katha directly. Illusions can be rejected by serving the nectar of your topics. This is directed to dry jnanis. There is a little criticism, but the criticism of some unwanted mentalities only, not any personal grudges towards anyone. They are glorifying Krishna Katha. So like that, Vidyadhara's prayers are nice. So these are the prayers. After these prayers, the Lord received all the prayers and He instructed Daksha. Daksha began the sacrifice, and Vishnu, although he is the enjoyer of sacrifices, he only took his share. Vishnu took only his share of the sacrifice. So then after the sacrifice and after accepting his share, he started instructing Daksha. He said, I am the super soul and the self-sufficient witness of everything. However, you need to understand that there is no difference between me, Brahma and Shiva. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all are same. And who is saying this? Vishnu is saying this. Prabhupada very wonderfully clarifies all these things. They are same in purpose, not in position. All of them, their purpose is to orchestrate this material creation. Right? And they have taken different roles in this creation to run the show. The purpose is same. So they are one in purpose, but they are not one in their position or powers. Right? So when the purpose is same, that is the true oneness. So the Lord is identifying, Lord is pointing out that kind of oneness between Himself and Brahma and Shiva. I am the original person, but for creation, maintenance and destruction, I act through Maya and take on different names. And those names are Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Because Lord's incarnations are of two categories. There are multiple categories. One way of categorizing Lord's incarnations is those incarnations that the Lord manifests through the external potency and those incarnations that He manifests through internal potency. What are the incarnations that operate through external potency? Purusha avatars and Guna avatars. Other avatars like Leela avatars and Amsha avatars, they are all manifested by internal potency. Right? They are all dealing with internal potency. But when the Lord wants to deal with material energy, He becomes Purusha avataras. So from Purusha avatara, from first Purusha avatara, Karanadaksha Vishnu's body, millions of universes will come, material universes, and Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters that material universe and manifests Virat Rup, material universe, different planetary systems. So like that. And Gunavataras. So Gunavataras are the in charges of three material modes. Right? So there are incarnations related to Maya, incarnations related to His internal potency. So for the purpose of creation, maintenance and destruction, I am taking on different names. So ultimately Shiva, Brahma and Vishnu are manifested by Vishnu only. Only an ignorant person sees difference between all of us. What to speak of Brahma and Shiva? A learned person does not see difference between me and other Jivas also. My devotees never see differences between me and Jivas. Just like, me and Jivas is not Mayavad. Lord is not speaking Mayavad here. The light in which we understand this verse is that there is no difference between body and bodily limb. There is a qualitative oneness between the Lord and Jiva. Now, if someone, say, hurts me here, right, takes a needle and pierces here. Are you pierced me? I pierced your hand, I didn't pierce you. If someone says like that, no, you pierce me only. Why? There is a oneness between the limb of the body and the body. Similarly, there is a oneness between the Lord and His devotees or the demigods or the Jivas in general. Right? If we trouble a Jiva, then the Lord is also experiencing the pain. Oh, someone is troubling my child. He feels like that, in that sense. Right? The result of seeing non-difference between the three of us is that one achieves peace. So, you should not disrespect me. You just worship Vishnu and offend a Vaishnava. Is it proper? He is just chastising him like that. So, Lord gave a warning to Daksha. Next. Daksha then worshipped Vishnu and after that he separately worshipped Brahma and Shiva also. And Daksha took a bath after the sacrifice along with all the priests and demigods blessed Daksha and they departed to their own abodes. And Sati, what happened to her? She took her next birth as the son of Menaka, who is the wife of Himalayas. At that time her name was Parvati. Again she chose Lord Shiva only as her husband and married him. So this story Maitreya Muni heard from Uddhava. And constant hearing and narrating of this pastime with devotion destroys all sin. So this is the conclusion of Daksha Yajna, or the whole episode of Sati, Daksha and Shiva. This was spoken by Maitreya because he was actually describing the lineages of daughters of Swayambhu Manu. One of the daughters is Prasuti. She married Daksha and they have 16 daughters and the 16th daughter was Sati. And she could not conceive a child. And Vidura asked why she does not have children. The response is the 6 chapters of Daksha episode. Daksha and Sati and Shiva episode. Okay. Now he needs to continue the lineages. He completed the lineages of the daughters of Swayambhu Manu. Some of the daughters of Swayambhu Manu were married to some sons of Brahma. Thus, in the course of narrating the lineages of daughters of Swayambhu Manu, he also narrated the lineages of sons of Brahma. But some sons are pending. So who are they? Kumaras, Narada, Rubhu, Hamsa, Aruni, Yati, all these people. But they never married, so no lineages. But there is another son called Adharma, So he married Vrsha, false city, and their dynasty is totally described here. We discussed recently, 3 days back only, I'll not go into details. So in the dynasty of Adharma, there was marriage and union between brother and sister, and thus all the descendants manifested. Dambha, Maya, then greed, Lobha, Nirukti, Krodha, Himsa, so all these different personalities, personification of different qualities they manifested. So thus the lineage of Adharma is ending up in Niraya, hell. So one who describes this lineage of Adharma 3 times, he will attain piety, because he will be disgusted with this kind of description, this kind of really abominable description, and he will be inspired to safeguard himself from these qualities, and thus that attitude will wash away his sin, and thus he will attain piety. So after describing the dynasty of Adharma, Maitreya Muni describes the pure pious glories of Dhruva. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was insulted by his stepmother Suruchi. He was trying to sit on the lap of his father, because on the lap he also saw Uttama. Uttama was sitting on the lap, but Uttanapada was not inviting Dhruva. He was not welcoming Dhruva. So he was neglected, and meanwhile Suruchi came and chastised him, "You did not take birth from my womb. Only, although you are the son of the king, someone who is born out of my womb is qualified to sit on your father's lap. So you should worship Narayana, and if he is kind enough, he will give his next birth to you in my womb, then you will be able to sit." So Dhruva became very agitated. He was hissing like a snake. In his great disappointment and anger, he went to his mother, and mother Suniti immediately, she was also tormented. Davagmina davalateva bala. She was tormented like a creeper or a leaf in the forest fire. So she tried to pacify and console Dhruva by saying that, "My dear son, never hold any inimical feelings towards anyone who must have pained your heart, because everyone receives the result of one's own past activities. So you cannot blame someone, through him that reaction is coming to you. So if you have any desire, you should always approach the Lord. Your great grandfather Brahmaji became successful in his attempt to create only by worshipping Lord Vishnu. Your grandfather Swayambhu Manu attained success in this life and in the next life only because of worshipping Vishnu. So if you also have any desire, either to sit on father's throne or anywhere, you should always worship Lord Vishnu. I am just one mother who can give you affection of one mother, but Lord Vishnu is can give you the affection of millions of mothers, so you should take his shelter. Tameva vatsashreya bhritya vatsalam bubukshubhir mrugya padabja paddhatim ananya bhave nija dharma bhavete manasya vasthapya bhajasva purusham." So other than the Lord, no one is capable of removing your distress. Like that, she directed Dhruva towards the Supreme Lord. So Dhruva contemplated very carefully, and he made a decision that, "I will worship the Lord. I will worship Krishna. I will go to the forest." So he went there. So being inspired by the Supreme Lord, Narada Muni arrived there to guide Dhruva. So he asked Dhruva, "Where are you going? And you should not be affected by honor and dishonor. You are a small child. You should not be knowing the difference between what is honor and insult. You should be attached to the sports. But if you are mature enough to understand the difference between honor and dishonor, you should also understand that they come as results of our past activities. So one should be satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. One should not be unnecessarily agitated. And you are trying to satisfy the Lord as directed by your mother. So it's very difficult. So many great yogis and munis, they tried to satisfy the Lord, but they could never achieve success. So how can you achieve success? You are a small child. So if at all you want to do it, you go back. Once you are grown up, once you become big, then you can come back. So you should give up your endeavor." This is my understanding, he says. And one who endures in any condition of life can cross over the darkness of nescience. And he also says, Gunadikan madam lipset anukrosham gunadhamat maitrim samanat anvichena tapai ravibhuyate. One who learns to respect other people, who is more qualified, and one who makes friendship with people who are equally qualified, and one who is compassionate towards people who are less qualified, such person need not experience any miseries in this world. This is how you should deal with people in this world. So don't be agitated. You can go back. But Dhruva Maharaj said, I appreciate your instructions, but I cannot accept your instructions. Because the path of the peace that you have taught is suitable for Brahmanas. But I am a Kshatriya. So my heart is pierced by the harsh words of Suniti. So please teach me an honest means by which I can attain my ambition. Then what is my ambition? I want to attain a position which is superior to my great grandfather also, Brahmaji also. Anadhishtitam. So no one must have occupied that post so far. I want such a great position. I want to prove myself in front of all these people. So Narada Muni was a bit surprised to see the great determination of this boy, and he taught him the means. He told him little initial procedures of Ashtanga Yoga, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Dharana, Dhyana, etc. And he elaborately taught him the process of meditating on the beautiful form of Vishnu. Tarunam ramaniyangam arunoshthikshanadharam pranatashrayanam ramnam sharanyam karunaranavam. So the result of the meditation on the form of Lord Vishnu is that one is freed from material contamination, one is enriched with highest bliss, and one is never deviated. So along with meditating on the form of the Lord, you should also chant the mantra, Dvadashakshari mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And also you should make a form of the Lord and worship the Lord with garlands and pure water, tulsi, fruits and whatever is available locally in the forest. So you should control your mind and you should go to Madhuvan and perform your austerities, perform your worship. So Dhruva Maharaj went to Madhuvan and Narada Muni went to Uttanapada. So he asked Uttanapada, how is your dharma, artha and kama going? He didn't ask about moksha because he is so absorbed in political responsibilities. He doesn't have time to think about moksha. And he also said, you look very morose. You look too disappointed. So what's happening? Then Uttanapada opened up and said, actually acted very mercilessly and cruelly towards my noble son Dhruva Maharaj and also his mother Suniti. She is a very chaste and devoted wife. I neglected them. I practically made them residenceless. So I am aggrieved about the safety of my son. So he went to forest. I don't know what wolves or ferocious animals must be attacking him, his tender body. I don't know whether he ate properly or not. So like that he expressed his anxiety. Then Narada Muni pacified him saying that don't be aggrieved of your son. Your son is very competent. And Sudushkaram karma krutva lokapalai rapi prabhu. He will perform activities that are difficult even for demigods to perform. And he will please the Supreme Lord. He will satisfy the Supreme Lord. That is the most difficult activity. So then Uttanapada gave up interest in his kingdom and started thinking about Dhruva only. Then meanwhile Dhruva Maharaj at Madhuvan, he was doing his austerities. He was eating only kapitta fruits once in 3 days. So eventually he increased the degree of his austerity by the fourth month. In the fourth month he was taking in only air once in 12 days. So like that the whole universe, and he started capturing the form of the Supreme Lord within his heart. And he started meditating very deeply on that form. And he closed all his bodily holes and the entire universe got suffocated. And he assumed the whole weight of the universe because he was carrying the Lord in his head and he pushed down the earth. And everybody got suffocated and all the demigods went and reported to Lord Vishnu, why are we getting suffocated? And Vishnu said, this is because of the austerities of my dear devotee Dhruva. So you don't worry, I'll go and do the needful. So the Lord came in front of Dhruva. So Dhruva was so far able to see the beautiful form of the Lord within his hat, but he was unable to see. At one point, he opened his eyes. He could see the same form of the Lord in front of his eyes, face to face. So Dhruva became ecstatic. So he was looking at the form of the Lord as if he is kissing his lotus feet with his mouth, as if he is embracing the form of the Lord with his arms. So like that he was meditating on the form, but he also wanted to offer prayers. But he did not have the necessary knowledge or vocabulary to offer prayers. So understanding his awkward position, the Lord touched his conch shell on the forehead of Dhruva. And Dhruva was bestowed with all Vedic knowledge. All the conclusions of scriptures were revealed to him from within. So Dhruva started offering prayers. This we already discussed elaborately 2 days back. Yontah pravishya mama vacham imam prasuptam sanjeevayatyakhila shakti dharasva dhamnam अन्यांश्चहस्तचरणश्रवणत्वगादीन् प्राणान्नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यम्। माय डियर लॉर्ड, यू एंटर्ड विदिन मी, यो अंतः प्रविश्य मम वाचम इमाम प्रसुप्तम्। द माय सेंस ऑफ स्पीकिंग इज स्लीपिंग सो फार, बट यू वोक इट अप। Right, you have awakened my sense of speech, and not only that, other senses also, hasta, charana, shravana, twag, adin, all of them you have enlivened with your swadhamna, with your internal potency. So internal potency acts as enlivener of the spiritual senses of the devotees of the Lord. On the other hand, the external potency of the Lord will empower the material senses of non-devotees to act on a material plane. Like that, Lord's energies will act in different capacities in the case of different living entities depending on their own dispositions. But Lord is the only shelter. How can any learned person forget his lotus feet? And foolish people worship the Lord with impure motives or motives of material gain. I am also like that. Artharthi Bhakta. Different Sukritinas will approach you for different purposes, but the worst amongst all of them is one who approaches you for material gain. I have approached you for material gain. I regret for it now. But now I don't have such desires. What I want is, I want the ananda of worshipping your lotus feet. Yanir vritistana bhritam tava pada padma dhyanad bhavajjana katha shravanena vasyat सा ब्रह्मणि स्वमहिमन्यपि नाथमाभूत् किं त्वन्तकासि लुलितात् पततां विमानात्। He says if bliss has to be attained, that can be attained only in two ways. That is by meditating on your lotus feet or by hearing about your glories from your devotees. So in front of that ananda of hearing Krishna Katha in the association of devotees, the bliss of merging in Brahman or the happiness of entering heavenly planets becomes insignificant. Right? Next he says, Bhaktim moh pravahatam tvayime prasango bhuyadananta mahatam amalashayanam येनांज सोल्वण मुरु व्यसनं भवाद्धिं नेश्य भवद्गुण कथामृतपान मत्तः। I want the association of those devotees who are constantly engaged in your devotional service. Bhaktim muhu, constant bhakti they are doing. Pravahatam tvayime prasango. And they are amalashayanam. Their aspirations are very pure and uncontaminated. Mahatam, they are great souls. So by getting their association, yena anjasa, very easily I can cross over this bhavabdhi, which is very fierce, which is filled with difficulties and miseries. And on top of it, along with association, I also have interest to hear about you in that association. Bhavat Gona Kathamrita Panamattaha. I want to get intoxicated by hearing your glories from your devotees. I don't have any separate plans for crossing over this material existence. And the association of the devotees also give attachment from other material attachments. And that will give detachment from material things. And previously I have experienced the Supreme. I have never experienced a form like yours. I have seen Deva, Danava and animals, birds, etc. But this form that you are manifesting in front of me now is the Supreme form. I offer respects to your form as Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu also. And he also gives the difference between the Lord and the Jivas. Tvam Nitya Mukta Parishuddha Vibuddha Atma. That verse, 15th verse, a long table we have seen. And finally he concluded his prayer by saying that, my dear Lord, I am like a calf and you are like a merciful cow. Just like a cow maintains the calf, although there is not much service on the side of the calf, still it maintains. Similarly, you should maintain me mercifully. So by saying this, he concludes his prayers. And the Lord bestows his benedictions upon Dhruva. He says, my dear Dhruva, you wanted a position which is superior to Brahmaji also. You wanted a very high position. I give you my position. I give you my abode. Not that he will become Vishnu. He will get a place in Vishnu's abode, like that. So you can come back to Godhead. But before that, you can rule this world for 36,000 years. And your brother Uttama will die in the hands of a yaksha. And your mother, stepmother Surichi, will die in a forest fire when she goes out to search for Uttama. And you can enjoy in this world. You will be able to remember me at the end of your life. You will come to my planet Dhruvaloka. And saying this, the Lord went. But Dhruva Maharaj was displeased. He was displeased because he thought that I was worshipping the Lord with such material ambitions, which was not proper on my part. How could I worship the Lord with that kind of attitude? So he lamented for it for a while. I desired perishable things. I am so unfortunate. Like that. I prayed for useless things. I wanted material prosperity. And Maitreya Muni tells Vidura, great devotees like you do not aspire for such material benefits. Navai mukundasya padaravindayo rajojushastata bhavadrishajanaha vanchanti taddasya mrityarthamatmano yadrichaya labdhamanaha samruddhayaha. Your devotees are satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. They don't desire any sense gratification or material gain, and for that purpose they don't worship the Lord. They worship the Lord only to serve Him. So Dhruva Maharaj returns back to his kingdom, and Uttanapada hears this news. He goes to receive Dhruva, and Suniti also goes along with Sudichi and Uttama in the same palanquin with her big heart of forgiveness. And all these three people, two mothers and one father and one brother, so all of them receive Dhruva Maharaj very nicely. And Sudichi is also very pleased with Dhruva. She blesses Dhruva. May you live long, she says. Yasya prasanno bhagavan gunair maitriyadi bhirharihi tasmai namanti bhutai nimnam apa ivasvayam. The Lord is, the Lord's devotees are so glorious that everyone loves them. Next, Uttama and Dhruva embraced each other, and Suniti also embraced Dhruva. She practically bathed Dhruva with her tears and milk. That indicated that Dhruva is going to be enthroned very soon as a king. Rajyabhishek will happen. Everyone praised Dhruva. In this context, Maitreya Muni also describes the city of Uttanapada and the palace of Uttanapada. And eventually, Uttanapada enthrones Dhruva Maharaj when he is grown up. He sees that Dhruva has good conduct and citizens love him, and ministers also gave that approval. So he enthrones Dhruva and he retires, even before the marriage of Dhruva. Then Dhruva Maharaj marries Brahmi and he gets two sons, Kalpa and Vatsara. And Dhruva also marries Ila and gets a daughter, beautiful daughter, and a son called Utkala. And once, as predicted by the Lord, Uttama was killed by a yaksha. He went for a hunting excursion and he was killed there. So Dhruva Maharaj heard this news, he was tormented, he became angry. He wanted to punish those people who killed his brother, and he goes to Alakapuri to fight with the yakshas. And Dhruva blows his conch shell, and all the wives of the yakshas become frightened. What is the sound coming from? And all the yakshas prepared themselves to fight with Dhruva. And Dhruva showed his military skills by just throwing 3 arrows at a time, and yakshas shot 6 arrows at a time. Like that, 130,000 yakshas were fighting with Dhruva simultaneously, each with 3 arrows, each with 6 arrows. Total 780,000 arrows were coming upon Dhruva every few seconds. So Dhruva seemed to have drowned in that shower of arrows, but he was only like a mountain being washed by the raindrops of these arrows. He just came out like sunrise. So like that, several analogies are given to describe Dhruva Maharaj's fight with yakshas. And yakshas, seeing the prowess of Dhruva Maharaj, just fled away. And Dhruva Maharaj wanted to see Alakapuri, but he thought for a while, no, I will not see Alakapuri now. Although these people just ran away, they may come and attack me again at any time. So Dhruva Maharaj was waiting, and true to his expectation or suspicion, so these yakshas created so many illusions. They created a magical mountain. From that mountain, so many abominable substances like blood, urine, pus, dead bodies are falling down. And there were so many ferocious animals, snakes, tigers, lions, elephants. And all these people were coming to attack Dhruva from all directions. So Dhruva is in the midst of all of that. When he was in that predicament, some sages came and reminded him of Narayanastra. Now you should release Narayanastra weapon to counteract these illusions. When you chant the holy names, the illusions created by Maya are gone. So in this, it's very symbolic that when a sadhaka is also tormented by so many material desires or other distractions created by Maya, he takes shelter of the association of devotees who bring him to the shelter of the holy names of the Lord. Then Dhruva Maharaj begins to fight, and the fight becomes really fierce, and at one point Dhruva Maharaj was really smashing all the yakshas. So he became excessively angry, Ati Rosha. Then Manu comes there. So he says that, my dear son Dhruva Maharaj, you should not be excessively angry, because excessive anger is sinful, that will open doors to hell. So it is not befitting our dynasty, it is not commended by virtuous people, it is condemned. It's not commended, but it is condemned by sadhus. So you should not kill so many people for one person's fault. And this happens only because of bodily misidentification. Please avoid unnecessary killing. I'm surprised by your act. You are destined to go to Vaikuntha. You are destined to go to Vaikuntha, and Lord personally predicted this when you were very small, when you were just 5 years old. So Lord is pleased with his devotees if they exhibit tolerance. Titikshaya, Karunaya, Maitriya, Cha Akhila Jantushu, Samatvena Cha Sarvatma, Bhagavan Samprasidati. If one exhibits tolerance, if one exhibits friendship and equanimity and compassion, one can please the Lord easily. Otherwise, one cannot please the Lord. And if one pleases the Lord, one becomes free from gunas. One becomes free from the functionings of these gross and subtle bodies, and he can achieve the Lord's abode also. You are destined to achieve the Lord's abode, but why are you behaving in a way that doesn't please the Lord? That might deprive you of your desired destination, right? So, and later he explains how Krishna is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the cause of maintenance, destruction and creation of this universe. He is only indirectly causing all the movements of the universe. He has inconceivable energies. So he only causes the beginning and end of all these living entities. Different philosophers may give different opinions about the cause of one's suffering, but ultimately no philosopher can understand Krishna's plan. He is the cause of all causes. Kuvera's followers did not kill your brother. So ultimately Supreme Lord is the cause of birth and death. Please understand this. And the Lord is unaffected by modes. Through His external energy, He controls and maintains living entities. So please surrender unto the Lord. He is the controller. So regain your natural position. Give up this anger. And also, because of your excessive anger, you have caused a lot of pain or hurt to the heart of Kuvera. You should go and appease him. You have killed his followers unnecessarily. You should go and appease him. By saying this, Manu returns to his abode and Kuvera comes there. Right? And he started speaking to Dhruva Maharaj. He says, "My dear Dhruva, you are sinless. It is sin to kill so many people unnecessarily. But Kuvera comes and says, you are sinless because you did not kill the Yakshas. They did not kill your brother also. Time is the cause of the death of both parties. So ultimately you are not the killer. This bodily conception is a product of ignorance and misconceived intelligence. So you should, as Manu advised, you should worship the Lord and focus on the transcendental features of the Lord. So I am pleased with you because you have restrained from fighting, taking the good advice of your grandfather." And he also enumerates the qualities of the Supreme Lord. So please ask any benediction that you want. So he says, Dhruva Maharaj was glad to receive the benediction. And also, Dhruva Maharaj says that by great sacrifices and charities, he worshipped the Lord. And even before that, Dhruva Maharaj asked for the benediction of unflinching remembrance of the Lord. Right? So Dhruva Maharaj asked for constant remembrance. So as we discussed earlier, Dhruva is a pure devotee who is destined to go to the Supreme Lord, his abode. But still he is asking that, he is begging forgiveness from Kuvera and is asking from him the benediction of unflinching remembrance of the Lord. Then Kuvera bestows that benediction also. The point here is, one cannot effort to displease an exalted personality and still continue with his remembrance of the Lord. The displeasure of Kuvera could act as an obstacle in the Krishna smaranam of Dhruva. For that reason, Dhruva wanted to appease Kuvera and seek his blessings also. So Dhruva Maharaj goes back to his kingdom. He performs great sacrifices. He worships the Lord. He engaged in bhakti. And Dhruva's qualities are described. Tameva shila sampannam, brahmanyam dina vatsalam, goptaram dharma setunam, menire pitaram prajaham. Tameva shila sampannam. This Dhruva Maharaj is endowed with all good character and qualities. Shila is character. Brahmanyam dinavatsalam. He is very respectful to the Brahmanas and he is very kind to the poor. Dinavatsalam. Goptaram dharma setunam. He is the protector of all the religious principles. Menire pitaram prajaha. He is protecting the citizens like a father. So, because these four chapters we have already discussed in the last 3 days, I went through them in very briefly. Now we can go little elaborately. So Dhruva Maharaj ruled like that. So his conduct of rule is of this flavor. It's filled with good qualities, good character, respect, kindness and protection. So like that he ruled for 36,000 years. So at one point, he retired. Understanding that the material world to be creation of Maya, he handed over the kingdom to his son and went to Badrikashram. So at Badrikashram, Dhruva Maharaj performed his yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. He constantly experienced ecstatic symptoms, and he saw a beautiful airplane, Vaikuntha airplane, coming to take him to the spiritual abode of the Lord. And Dhruva Maharaj could see two chief associates of the Lord, Nanda and Sunanda. So they stood up and offered respects to Dhruva Maharaj. We came to take you to Vaikuntha. Dhruva Maharaj was absorbed in Krishna. So Nanda and Sunanda spoke to Dhruva Maharaj. Let there be a good fortune unto you, my dear Dhruva. We came to take you. Please reside in this Vishnu's airplane. You are worthy to board this unique airplane sent by the Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj boards the airplane. He offers respects to Nanda and Sunanda. So while boarding the airplane, before boarding the airplane, he offers respects to all the sages at Badrikashram, and also he places his foot on deck personified and then enters the abode, enters the airplane of Vaikuntha. And at this point, Dhruva Maharaj remembered his mother Suniti. He was thinking, how can I go back to Vaikuntha without my mother? So it is my mother who taught me Krishna Bhakti, who inspired me to practice devotional service. Without her, I could not have attained this privilege of going back to Vaikuntha. So I cannot go to Vaikuntha without her. So he was thinking like that. As he was thinking, Nanda and Sunanda showed another airplane, Vaikuntha airplane, in which Mother Suniti was also going. Right. So on the way, Dhruva was seeing so many planets. Eventually he reached Dhruva Loka. So who is eligible to attain Lord's abode? That's mentioned here in the conclusion of this episode. Shantaha samadrisha suddhaha sarvabhuta anuranjanaha yanti anjasachyuta padam achyuta priyavandhavaha shantaha samadrishaha suddhaha means those people who are very mild, very peaceful, samadrishaha, who are endowed with the quality of equanimity, sarva bhutanu ranjanaha, their activities and their character and their whole demeanor is pleasing to everybody. Such people can easily attain Lord's abode. Yanti anjasa achyuta padam. Achyuta padam means spiritual abode of the Lord. Anjasa means very easily. Yanti, they go there. Achyuta priyabandhavaha, they become the most dear associates and relatives of the Lord. Or achyuta priyabandhavaha means those who are already relatives and friends of the Lord, those who are very affectionate to the Lord, with such people they make friendships. Right? Like that, these are the qualities of someone who achieves the spiritual reward of the Lord. So like that Narada Muni, and like that Dhruva Maharaj went back to Godhead. And Narada Muni sang the glories of Dhruva Maharaj in the sacrifice conducted by Prachetas. So Narada Muni, the spiritual master of Dhruva, was glorifying Dhruva. Dhruva attained such an unattainable position. So it comes in 41, 42, 43. Three verses, Narada Muni's glorification. He attained unattainable position. He conquered the unconquerable Lord at very young age in a very short time. So that is the glory of Dhruva. Lord is unconquerable, but he conquered. Lord's abode is unattainable, he attained. So like that. They cannot even attain the method by which Dhruva attained the goal. What to speak of the goal itself? Other people cannot do it. That's why the position is unattainable. So Phalashruti. Great devotees like to hear about Dhruva Maharaj's life. Even Lord Chaitanya is also very eager to hear about Dhruva's life. The benefits of hearing this pastime are wealth, fame, religiosity and pure bhakti, which is like our focus. All the sinners and miseries will be diminished. And the way of reciting this story is mentioned. When to recite and what is the result of such reciting. One should reside with great care and attention in a society of brahmanas without taking remuneration by persons who have taken shelter of the Lord before a favorable audience. Like that. Those who distribute this knowledge will get demigods' blessings. Maitreya thus concluded the narrations of Dhruva Maharaj. Now Vidura has a question. He said, who are these prachetas? You said that Narada Muni glorified Dhruva Maharaj in the sacrifice of prachetas. Who are these prachetas? I want to know. So Maitreya Muni continues. Vidura was overwhelmed about the ascent of Dhruva to the Lord's abode. He asked, who are the prachetas? And Narada Muni was such an exalted personality. While prachetas were executing sacrifices, Narada Muni glorified the pastimes of Dhruva and pastimes of the Lord. I am very eager to know them. So, these prachetas are appearing in the dynasty of Dhruva only. But before the appearance of prachetas in Dhruva's dynasty, so many other personalities also appeared. So Maitreya Muni thought it wise that, let me continue Dhruva's story only, Dhruva's descendants, right from his son. And I'll continue the whole dynasty and eventually come to prachetas, then he will get his answer and I'll complete the dynasty description also. So Maitreya Muni continues. The son of Dhruva Maharaj, Utkala, he did not accept the throne. So you can see Utkala's qualities are described. So Dhruva departed for the forest and his eldest son was Utkala. Now in the 4th canto, 10th chapter, it is mentioned that Dhruva Maharaj married Ila and through her he got the son Utkala. And he married Brahmi and through her he had two other sons, they are Kalpa and Vatsara. So now we are discussing about the first son, Utkala, who is the eldest. Utkala's qualities. He is Upashantatma, very peaceful person. Nissanga, very detached person. Samadarshanaha, equipoised man. Dadarsha loke vitatam, he saw the Supreme Lord in all the jivas. Atmanam lokamatmani, he saw the jivas in the Supreme Lord. Like that, all his wonderful qualities are mentioned. He is a great devotee. So, because of his devotional qualities, he did not show any interest in ruling the kingdom. So most of these Rajarshis, they have no interest in ruling the kingdom. They want to perform devotional service only. But some Rajarshis, they become Rajas, some of these kings, they become Rajas and take that responsibility for certain amount of time and then they take to devotional service. And some of these king's sons, they do not take political responsibilities at all, they directly retire. So because Utkala did not accept the kingdom, and how did he not accept the kingdom? To the vision of people, Utkala appeared to be less intelligent. For example, Jadabharat, although he is such an enlightened soul within, externally he is appearing as if he is very, very foolish and dumb person. He acted like that, just to avoid bad association. Now Utkala, he appeared to the less intelligent people as foolish, blind, dumb, deaf and mad, like fire covered with ashes. So hence the ministers thought that we cannot enthrone him as king. But internally he self-realized. He is a pure devotee of the Lord. But externally he is appearing like a foolish man. So by the external demeanor of a person, one may not be able to judge the internal depth. So they took the next son, another son, Vatsara, the son of Brahmi, as the king. So Vatsara became the king. Now Vatsara, he married Swarviti, right? Swarviti, and he got two sons through her, Pushparna and Tigmaketu. In page number 102, you can see this whole table. And the whole dynasty continues from Vatsara to Pushparna, then Vyushta, Sarvateja, Chakshusha, Ulmukha, and finally it comes to Anga Maharaj. So in the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj, there were so many kings, and the story comes to a pause at Anga Maharaj. When he comes to Anga, he doesn't continue the dynasty. He will focus more on it. So Anga Maharaj married Sunitha. And they got one son, Vena. All the previous kings were glorious, but this Vena was not glorious. He was very crooked in nature. And Anga Maharaj became disgusted with this bad son, Vena. So this fourth canto also gives a comparison between a good king and a bad king. One of your presentation topics. Good kings many are there. There is one bad king also, that is Vena. So Vena's death. So after Vena's death, Prithu took birth. The next person in the lineage is Prithu Maharaj. So Vidura was astonished. Anga is such a wonderful person. How could he get a bad son? How a bad son came from a good king? How good things happen to bad people or bad things happen to good people, you said it. How bad son can come from a good king, good father? So, and why the sages cursed the king, Vena? And king is disregarded by the citizens, that never happens. King is always respected by the citizens. So Vena is disregarded by citizens, cursed and killed by the sages, and his activities are disapproved by his father. So Vena, from all parties, he only got disapproval. So I want to know more about this king Vena. So when Vidura asked like that, Maitreya Muni narrates. Once Anga Maharaj was performing a yajna. So in that sacrifice, the demigods did not appear. Although he was chanting mantras and offering oblations and invoking the presence of demigods, demigods are not coming only, despite all these invitations. So Anga Maharaj was surprised. So he asked the priests what happened. Priests told that the demigods are not accepting your oblations and we are unable to find any reason. Then Anga was aggrieved and he asked, did I commit any offenses? Did I commit any mistakes in this life? Then the head priest said, you did not commit any mistake, but you do not have a son. Ask for the Lord for a son and pray to the Lord. Then the demigods will come. You should conduct a sacrifice for the Supreme Lord, requesting for a son, and then you conduct sacrifice, then demigods will appear in that sacrifice. So Lord Hari fulfills the desires of everyone, and Anga Maharaj worshipped Lord Vishnu through a sacrifice, and the sacrificial personality appeared from the fire with a golden pot with sweet rice, payasam, and that payasam was given to Sunitha. And the Sunitha, Anga Maharaj's wife, happens to be the daughter of Mrityu. So because she is the daughter of Mrityu, she developed that kind of qualities. She developed, she was not worthy of accepting that payasam. But Anga Maharaj was a very liberal king, so he gave that payasam to Sunitha. So because of inheriting the qualities of maternal grandfather, the son of Anga Maharaj became very cruel. So he acquired qualities from mother's side, so he became very cruel. So Vena is so cruel that he kills innocent children. He just picks up innocent children and throws them into water, right, or ocean. And he kills his own playmates, not beating, killing. Very merciless. Anga Maharaj attempted to reform Vena in so many ways. So even from childhood he is exhibiting so much of cruelty, and he tried to rectify his mentality, but he thought that at one point he realized that I won't be able to rectify him anymore. So he thought, sonless people are more fortunate than people who have sons. Earlier I was regretting for not having a son, but now I am having a regret that I have a son. A sinful son vanquishes everything. My name, my fear, my piety and my wealth, everything is vanquished because of this bad son. So no one wants such a bad son. So having no son is better than having this kind of son. But later he contemplated, no. Having bad son is better than having a good son. Why? Because if one has a good son, then he will be attached to that son. Thus he will be attached to family life, he will be attached to wealth, he will be attached to kingdom and treasure and the whole material existence. But if one has a bad son, he can develop detachment from this family life or material existence in general, this whole kingdom. So I am very thankful to Vena, thanking him in the heart, appreciating his own fortune of having a bad son that eventually led him to detachment and renunciation. He just leaves home in the middle of the night. So everybody was aggrieved. My God, where is our king? Because everyone loves the king, Anga Maharaj. He is such a great devotee. So they were going everywhere to search. So they searched everywhere, but they could not find Anga Maharaj. So understanding this, the citizens, priests, ministers, etc., they were greatly aggrieved and began searching for him, but he was not visible only. So, when Anga went, the sages, the brahmanas, became very concerned about the welfare of people in general. When a king is not there, the kingdom is in chaos. There will be no one to administer the laws. There is no one to oversee the Varnashram institution, whether it is happening properly or not. There is no one to protect the citizens. There is no one to correct the citizens. So the whole kingdom will be in chaos. A leader, a community without a leader is in chaos. So sages could understand the situation, the political situation, and they enthroned Vena. Because when father is not there, the son is supposed to be the king. So, and everybody knows the cruel nature of the king, but still, circumstantially they enthroned Vena. I'll come through one minute. Yeah, you can ask me. Mike.
It's Vena, he leaves and goes away. So, again, just questions. Whenever they stick on this, like say, people could have said that Vena is a he didn't do his duty, something like that, or they could say that he could have killed him or punished him. Rather, he let the bad person, he gave the kingdom in the hands of a bad person and ran away. So such comments, and then that means Anga should not be delivered because he has escaped from his duty, not only towards his family, which is lesser, but towards his subjects also he ran away from, because he kept him in the hands of such a bad person. So in such a case, will Lord still accept him if he goes behind the Lord? Is what is the answer to this? In frustration he left.
So Bhagavatam has different episodes where different flavors of behavior are exhibited by devotees and kings. Not everyone will behave exactly in the same manner. Different examples are there. We take inspiration from these examples and try to see how relevant are they in our current time, place, circumstances, and apply principles there. So Anga Maharaj's example is given because he saw this whole situation as something favorable for him to develop detachment, and he went to practice devotional service. He went into the forest. On the other hand, you can also see the example of Uttanapada. Without even getting his son married, he went. And Prachetas, although Prachetas did not assume the roles as rulers, still Prachinavar he left, right? There was no king. But still he retired. So, I'm coming there. So, some examples are like that. But Priyavrata, although he was in renounced order, upon the request of his superiors, he came and assumed the role of a king. So, we find a variety of examples. But the intent of all these people is glorious. Four Kumaras rejected the order of Brahmaji because they want to be Vasudeva Parayana. Priyavrata accepted the order of Brahmaji, same order. Order to both parties is exactly same. But Priyavrata accepted with a sacrificing spirit, I let me extend myself and sacrifice my own personal ambition to be renunciant, let me do this service to my superiors. That protected him. Both exactly opposite, they acted in an opposite way. And Kardama is somewhere in the middle. Kardama Mani, when he was asked by Brahmaji to create progeny, he did 10,000 years of bhakti yoga. He married Devahuti. He created, say, 9 daughters and one boy. And after that, he retired. So he fulfilled, he accepted the instruction of Brahmaji without compromising on his devotional service, but he spared little time to execute that instruction. He did not do great wonders that Priyavrata has done. And he did not deny the instruction like four Kumaras have done. Four Kumaras said, no, we are not interested. Priyavrata said, yes, I will come, although I am not interested. And Kardamani, I am not interested, but still I will do something. He took the charge of household life for a limited amount of time. Even before getting married only, he did 10,000 years of bhakti yoga, and before getting married, he put a condition, as soon as she gets some children, I will go. And as soon as Kapil Dev is born, he just left. Like that, he took the medium thing. So there A, B, C. And there are people who just left, like Anga Maharaj. Out of Russian he left. So in the context of Uttanapada, the Lord, Prabhupada says that the need for self-realization is so important and one has to give it urgent priority that one need not wait. One cannot wait for the political situation or other responsibilities to be fulfilled, right? So that, in that consciousness he left, Uttanapada. Similar is here. So the circumstances in which a person does something or doesn't do something are different, but what is common amongst all these people is that they are all devotees of the Lord. They did the service in their own unique ways. Either they sacrificed or they did not sacrifice their personal ambitions, or whether they were efficient in their service or not that efficient in the service, whether they left the kingdom with full detachment or did little bit of responsibility and then left. It's all according to the individual's choice. But the intention was glorious. Right? So, Anga Maharaj, you can impose, say, mistake on all these people. If he has done this, he has not done the other thing. If four Kumaras rejected the order, that means they did not accept the order. That means in comparing them with Priyavrata, you may say that four Kumaras are wrong. Or comparing with four Kumaras, Priyavrata may be proved wrong. Alright, whatever happens, you need not be obliged to all these requests. You should focus on devotional service only. But Priyavrata's example we give for a sacrificing spirit. And four Kumaras' example we give for honesty. Honest expression of one's disinterest in certain service and then their focus on devotional service. Right. And similarly, Anga Maharaj's example we can give for detachment in such kind of circumstances. Right? Like there is a possibility that you can impose irresponsibility, this and that on his character also, but we are no one to say that. Acharyas are not pointing out. And Prabhupada did not say that, Prabhupada or Chakravarti, but they did not comment, at least I didn't read, go through it. If they have commented, that's fine. They did not comment that he is irresponsible in doing like this. But Prabhupada made another comment on Brahmanas. So the political situation was like this. There was no king. So Brahmanas were in a position to rectify this political situation. So responsibly, although they are Brahmanas, responsibly they came forward and enthroned this, Vena as a king. But when Vena was proved to be a bad king, they dethroned him and they just allowed Prithu Maharaj to appear. Right? They did the needful for the appearance of Prithu Maharaj. So in that context, Prabhupada writes, if you have the ability to do something positive in the society, and if you still fail to do, one will incur sin. Right? In that case, Prabhupada just brought out that beautiful lesson that these brahmanas, although they were brahmanas, they took that responsibility to rectify the political situation. So in that sense it's mentioned. But sometimes it may not be the priority of a person. So there is, he may be, the inner call within him is so strong that he may want to just focus on the detachment and surrender only, then thinking about the other things also. Right? So different people give different examples, and if we just impose our analysis and all, we could find fault with some people. He could have done like this, he could have done like that also, that. But like my little understanding is, the way the pastime is happening, we accept the pastime as it is. Right? And whatever messages are pointed out by the acharyas, based on the way the pastime is happening, we accept them. And if they are, acharyas are also giving the possibility of, if this could have happened, that could have happened, we take from that inputs also. But sometimes while trying to analyze some sastric characters, beyond what is explained by the acharyas or the scripture itself, there is a possibility of minimizing their glory or minimizing their position, or could be offending them also. Once I was giving this Kumara's episode only, one of our devotees, one of our students, he said that four Kumaras seem to be too brittle, right? They seem to be too reactive, because Brahmaji told them and they are immediately on the face, they are saying no. I said, their brittleness is not pointed out by the acharyas. The next day, like that next statement that he was trying to make is, so in our dealings with other devotees also, we see some people are very brittle. You tell them to do something and they don't do. They are on the face, through straightforward, they just say, I cannot do this. Right? So the brittleness of the person struggling sadhaka whom you are handling, you cannot impose that brittleness on four Kumaras. Did Prabhupada see anything about their brittleness or anything in the purports? Prabhupada was profusely glorifying them, and Chakravartipada was glorifying them for saying no to Brahmaji and focusing on being Vasudeva Parayana. Right? So in our regular day-to-day circumstances, we may find situations, and the situations and people's time, place, circumstances and all, the situations of people could match with certain aspects of Shastra, certain characters of Shastra, certain episodes of Shastra. However, we take inputs from Shastra to our practical life and do not impose certain human frailties and our conventional behavioral patterns of regular people, sadhakas or materialistic people, on the Shastric characters, unless they are pointed out by acharyas. So we analyze Shastric characters, we analyze Shastric episodes, pastimes, but within the purview of the details given there, within the purview of the explanations given by the acharyas there. Right? And definitely introspection is needed, contemplation is needed, analysis is needed. We need to understand the Shastra with intelligence. But at the same time, we need to also do that with a slight caution note that, oh, am I just getting into the zone of offending a personality by doing this, or just am I taking lesson which is already present there, or am I imposing some of my thoughts on that? Does it make sense? I am telling a generic thing only, because I don't have an answer for your question. He could have done like this, he could have done like that. It may seem irresponsibility, but that's not, that side of his activity was not pointed out. So I don't have any comments on that. Apparently it may seem irresponsibility, but that's not being highlighted. So who are we to highlight? My little understanding, probably some other experienced devotee could have analyzed it in a different way, could have seen this pastime, could have read this pastime in a different Purana, and then more details are given. So then we may take inputs there. But based on my current limited study and analysis and understanding, that side of his activity was not mentioned, was not analyzed by the Acharya, so I don't have much to say about it. Does it make sense? Anyone has any comment on this? Okay. So the sages were really concerned about the welfare of people in general. So the sages enthroned Vena with the permission of Sunitha, and the thieves became very fearful. Although Vena was a bad king, still his presence on the throne could keep the thieves little fearful or away from doing something wrong. Because if you are caught, whether he'll catch or not, we don't know. But if you are caught, he may punish us, right? He may kill us. So they have that kind of fear, right? So Vena travelled everywhere and caused the trembling of earth and sky. Vena prohibited religious activities. So sages once started discussing amongst themselves out of compassion. Because there was no king, we enthroned this king. Enthroned this bad king. So people are in danger now. Sometimes the decision taken by a glorious person also could, the time could prove that decision may be wrong, right? But taking a wrong decision is not wrong. Having a capability and inclination, willingness to rectify that wrong decision and do the needful is important. So these sages felt that people are disturbed by the king himself now. King is not allowing the sacrifices to be performed. So the mischievous king is supporting him. Supporting a mischievous king is like maintaining a poisonous snake with milk. So we should do the needful now. Let us go to the king Vena and let us try to pacify him with good counsel. And if he doesn't listen, we can even kill him. Right. So the sages made up their minds like this, and then they went. So one should hear the good advice from people. So they said, sages went and told Vena, please hear our good advice, and you should follow dharma. If you follow dharma, you can avoid fall down. And they described the duties of a pious king. A pious king who allows religious activities in his kingdom, who protects his citizens properly, he will enjoy in both lives. He will enjoy in this life also and in the next life also, right? And he satisfies the Lord. And when the Lord is satisfied, then there is nothing for him impossible to achieve. He can achieve anything. So the Lord is everything. So you should direct your citizens to worship the Lord. You should allow the sacrifices to be conducted. You should not obstruct the sacrifices. If you stop the sacrifices, you are disrespecting the demigods. You are disrespecting the Supreme Lord. That will not give you desired results. So our suggestion to you is, please allow the sacrifices to happen. And please conduct yourself properly. Then Vena said, you are all childish. You are all unchaste. You are all inexperienced. Who is Supreme Lord? Who is the Supreme Lord you are talking about? King is the Supreme Lord. So your affection for demigods is improper, and having affection for the demigods means displaying unchastity. You should be chaste to the king. King is the personification of all demigods. King is the Supreme Lord himself. Neglecting me, ignoring me, you are saying someone else. So you are unchaste. So worship me with all your offerings. All sacrifices should be conducted for me, whatever. So in the 10th canto, we have Vena Gita. This is Vena Gita here. So Vena is giving teachings to all the sages. So generally, Kshatriya receives teachings from Brahmanas, counsel from Brahmanas. Now this Kshatriya is instructing Brahmanas. So the sages felt that, my God, this fellow is not ready for any negotiation. Let's kill him. The sages said, kill him, kill him. So this impudent, shameless person who is blaspheming Vishnu should be killed immediately. So the sages killed Vena just by chanting mantras. But Vena's body was preserved by his mother Sunitha. So the sages assembled there and began to discuss. Now there is no king. Earlier there was no king, they enthroned Vena. Vena proved to be a bad king, they dethroned him, they killed him, now there is no king. So sages were concerned about the disturbances in the country. They saw a big dust storm caused by rogues and thieves. So they understood this and they again considered, what can we do, what can we do? They thought, this neglect could diminish our own spiritual power. So we cannot afford to diminish our spiritual power by being indifferent to this situation. So I have the ability to do something, let me do something like that. So they went to Sunita. They asked her, get the dead body of your son, which you have preserved. They churned the thighs of Vena's dead body and Bahuka from the sinful part, from the contaminated part of Vena's body, Bahuka appeared, or Nishadha. He is the main person of the Nishadha race. So he came. So then he became the father of Nishadha race, and all the people in that race are very sinful. So after separating out the sinful contamination in Vena's body, which came from Sunita, what is remaining is the pure part of his body, which came from Anga Maharaj. So they churned the arms of Vena, and Prithu Maharaj appeared. And Prithu Maharaj, the sages churned the two arms of King Vena's dead body, and along with Prithu Maharaj, Archi also appeared, a divine couple appeared. Again, both of them, Vena and Prithu and Archi, both are appearing from the same source. That doesn't mean we can impose a relationship of brother and sister on them. Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa appeared from the same source, but they cannot be brother and sister. And Yajna and Dakshina also appeared from the same parents. They cannot be brother and sister because their eternal relationship cannot be changed. When Brahmaji was honestly contemplating on the Supreme Lord, how should I increase the progeny, increase the population of this universe? From that contemplation, this couple came, Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa. So a couple may manifest. So wife and husband will together manifest. The source of their manifestation could be same, but we cannot impose brother-sister relationship on them. So Prithu Maharaj is a plenary expansion of Vishnu, and Archi is a plenary expansion of Mother Lakshmi. So Prithu will become the best of the kings. He is a Shaktyavish avatara. He is empowered by the Palana Shakti of the Lord. So the Lord appeared to protect the people, and Sri appeared as Archi to become his queen. So there was a great jubilation at the time of Prithu Maharaj's appearance. So Brahmanas praised the king, and auspicious sounds were there in the outer space. And Brahmaji's conclusion is that King Prithu is the Lord's partial representation. Seeing his symptoms and all, he could understand that Brahmaji, Prithu is an exalted personality. Then, at the time of his appearance, different paraphernalia was arranged to coronate him, and so many big personalities from various parts of the universe came to offer various gifts, presentations to Prithu Maharaj. So the presentations were listed in page number 112. Kuvera offered a golden royal throne, and Varuna offered an umbrella. Vayu offered two chambers. Dharma offered flower garland. Indra offered excellent crown. Yama offered a punishing rod. Like that, different devotees, different personalities offered different paraphernalia to Prithu Maharaj at the time of his coronation. So at that time Prithu Maharaj gave a speech. So along with these presentations, there were some professional bards. There are Suta Magara Vandi. These are the names given to professional bards, professional reciters. They come in a royal function and they start glorifying the activities and deeds of great kings. So addressing them, Prithu Maharaj said, "You are glorifying my qualities so much, but I have not yet manifested. I just appeared. I just appeared as a king. I have not assumed the role as a king, and I have not started my activities. I have not displayed all my qualities. So, why are you glorifying me? You should not glorify me. You can glorify me when I exhibit all these qualities in future. And even then also, you should glorify me in my absence, not in my presence. So, if you praise a person who does not actually have such qualities or displayed that qualities, it's more or less like an insult only, right? He is not having that quality and you glorifying him to have that quality. It may appear like sarcasm or unnecessary praise or an insult. Oh, you don't have that quality. Something like that. So one should not praise before one displays that qualities. So I am not yet famous now. So Prithu Maharaj very mildly and gently discouraged the professional bats, very humbly told the professional bats, please don't glorify me. But the professional bats became more excited and they became more attracted to the humility and gentle demeanor of Prithu Maharaj, and they are inspired to glorify more. And on top of it, they have permission and approval of so many sages there also. They also told, you can glorify Prithu Maharaj. Good people have to be glorified. So, they said that, it is not possible for us to glorify you. You are an incarnation of the Lord. You have appeared out of your causeless mercy. So, nonetheless, we glorify you. Because we have taste for glorifying your activities. And we have been encouraged by the sages also. So, Prithu Maharaj, their glories they will sing now, professional reciters. Yesha dharma bhrutam sreshto lokam dharme anuvartayan gopta cha dharma setunam shasta tat paripanthinam. The professional bat say, yesha dharma bhrutam sreshto, best of all followers of dharma is Prithu Maharaj. Lokam dharme anuvartayan. One engages everyone in following dharma. He is the person who engages other people also in following dharma. Gopta cha dharma setunam. He is the protector of dharma, principles of dharma. Shasta tat paripanthinam. Shasta means chastiser, one who punishes. One who violates dharma will be punished by this Prithu Maharaj. Thus, in various ways, he will protect dharma. He is the upholder of dharma. So they glorified him like that. And Prithu Maharaj will act like different demigods. If you see page number 115 and 116, all the future activities of Prithu Maharaj and his qualities are mentioned. A king is said to be the personification of all the demigods. So, how Prithu Maharaj exhibits the qualities of different demigods are listed here. This chapter is covered? Yeah. So, we will not go into details. So, for example, this one or two examples we will take. Surya or sun god, he evaporates water from earth's surface and releases the water during monsoon. So, he collects this. Similarly, king also, he collects taxes and releases them at the time when citizens need them. He will not take it for himself because sun does not take water for himself. He stores them and he releases it also during monsoon. Similarly, king also, Prithu Maharaj here, he will extract taxes from citizens and releases them at the time of need. Like the Bhumi's tolerance, Indra's ability to supply rain, Chandra's ability to please everyone with his cooling rays, Varuna's ability to hide valuables, treasures, Vishnu's ability to be glorious, Agni's ability to be powerful, Vayu's quality of being all-pervading and neutral, Dharma's quality of being impartial, Sun's quality of being unimpeded, all these are manifest in the personality of Prithu Maharaj. Right? And further qualities, they mention, from 15th verse to 19th verse, Ranjayishyati Mano Ranjakaihi. The Lord, Prithu, or King, his activities are very pleasing to the mind of everybody. So like that, there are so many other qualities, you can go through it. And it's already covered also. And they also predict the future qualities and activities of Prithu Maharaj. This Prithu will milk the earth very soon, in future. and extract all kinds of desirable commodities from Mother Earth. And he travels to different places. He terrifies thieves. He conducts so many sacrifices. He will eventually meet 4 Kumaras, and his fame is widespread. And with unchecked power, he will conquer the world and eradicate the 3-4 millions of citizens. Like that, they glorify Prithu Maharaj. So that is the description of the professional bards. Now, 17th chapter. So in this, Prithu Maharaj is satisfied with the bards, and he gave them gifts and worshipped them, and he also glorified them in return. So sometimes some people may genuinely appreciate us, although we are reluctant to accept that glorification or praise. For example, some special guest comes to our place. Now he is addressing the audience. Now the host will glorify him for whatever he has done. Some introduction is given, right, to the speaker. So that kind of glorification is there. He says, but still they will continue to glorify. the host will continue to glorify. So sometimes we need to see that although the person is denying that, still a person does it, and ultimately that is pleasing only. For example, you are serving prasad to someone. So you serve one gulab jamun you give. So you understand that he likes that gulab jamun. So he give one more. But out of modesty or whatever, he says, no, please don't go. But take one more. So you just give. But if he has sugar and he's genuinely saying, desperately saying, please don't feed me, then you kind of restrain yourself from giving more sweets, right? So professional bards did like that. So Prithu Maharaj very gently denied their glorification, but he did not become angry with them. Yeah, I will glorify him, I will beat you. He did not say all that. So there are some very pleasantly and lovingly, there is a push. Right, that loving push is always pleasant. But if it is a forceful push, forcefully one does it, then it becomes unpleasant. Like that. So Prithu Maharaj received that whatever affection and encouragement and blessings of 4 Kumaras, and he gave them gifts. Now Vidura asked some questions about Prithu. He said, why did the earth take the form of a cow? Because professional bards predicted that earth will take the form of a cow and Prithu will milk this cow to get so many desirable commodities. So why did the earth take the form of a cow? He asked. And who became the calf and what was the milking pot? And how did Prithu make the uneven earth flat? So why did Indra steal his sacrificial horse? What destination did Prithu Maharaj achieve? And what did he hear from Sanat Kumar and 4 Kumaras? So narrate all these glorious topics of Prithu. So like that, in the beginning of 17th chapter, based on the predictions of the professional bards, Vidura asks so many questions to Maitreya. So now Maitreya begins to answer. So once citizens of Prithu Maharaj came to Prithu and said, my dear king, we are suffering of hunger because there are no sufficient grains. We have come to take your shelter. So Prithu Maharaj contemplates, there are no grains. My citizens are suffering from hunger. What's happening? So he contemplates, and by his great intelligence he understands that Mother Earth is not releasing the grains. All the grains were hidden in Mother Earth and she was not releasing. So he became very angry upon the earth. So earth took the form of a cow and started running away from Prithu Maharaj. So we are suffering, earth started running away. So Prithu Maharaj, on his chariot, he started chasing the earth to all the places. So the earth, Mother Earth could not escape Prithu. She, at one point, she turned back and she offered obeisances to Prithu and took his shelter in helplessness. She said, why are you chasing me like this? Why are you attempting to kill me like this? It's not proper. I'm a woman. And you are the knower of religious principles, your dharmajna, you can see page number 120, a summary of Earth's appeal to Prithu or Earth's reason to reasons for not to be killed is given. And Prithu Maharaj's arguments to the Earth are also given, just two tables. So Earth says, you are the knower of religious principles, you are dharmajna, you are the shelter of surrendered, apanna vatsala, you are the king and should protect all the living entities. And I am a poor person, Dina. I have not committed any sinful activities also. How can a knower of dharma kill a woman? It is improper. So no one strikes even a sinful woman. What to speak of a woman like Mother Earth? So I am like a strong boat on which the whole world stands. So if you break me to pieces, how will you stop everyone from drowning into Garbhodaka ocean? So Earth is the sustenance of all living entities. How will you manage to maintain your citizens without me? So in various ways, Earth presented various reasons why Prithu should not strike Mother Earth. So Prithu Maharaj gave his counter-arguments. He said, you have disobeyed my orders. Though you have accepted your share of the yajñas, in return you have not given food grains. Although you eat grass daily, you are not filling your milk bag. Therefore, punishing an offender like you, although you are in the form of a woman, it's not unsuitable. You foolishly do not deliver the seeds of plants formerly created by Brahma, which are now hidden within you. So like that, Prithu Maharaj also gives so many reasons. He also says, I shall cut you and with your flesh pacify the hunger-stricken citizens. It's a circumstantial statement made, and one should not take it literally. And Prabhupada writes that if there is an acute shortage of food, a dried up cow may be utilized to free the hungry masses of people. But the maintenance of slaughterhouses for the satisfaction of the tongue should not be sanctioned by the government. So there is some apadharma and there is samanya dharma. Apadharma means that religious principle that could be adopted in emergency. Samanya dharma means that religious principle that is applicable during all normal circumstances. So one should not take this statement and then say eating cow flesh is one of it. Right? Out of anger he mentioned something, and Prabhupada is also clarifying. In times of famine or something, a dried up cow, very old cow, which is close to her death or whatever, so that could be taken under certain circumstances, like that. A king may kill a cruel person, whether it is a man or woman or eunuch, a king can kill a cruel person who is interested only in self-maintenance and is merciless. That is not considered killing. So Prithu Maharaj justified his act of killing Mother Earth. So you are a false, proud, insane cow. I shall cut you to small pieces and I will support the entire population by my mystic powers. So I may not even feed your flesh to them. I can just do with my own mystic powers. I can do it. But I have the need and authority to punish a sinful person like you. Because you are accepting your sacrificial share and you are not releasing grains. Then Mother Earth offered prayers to Prithu. She said, I offer my respects unto you, my dear Lord. Other than you, who can be my shelter? You created all the living entities and are now maintaining and protecting them. And your activities cannot be understood by everyone, especially people who are bewildered by Maya. So you possess great but mutually contrary energies. Dhara dhara. I am like a boat holding everything. Now I am bewildered by your activities. Earlier as Varahadev, the Lord held earth, Lord protected earth. Now me as a Kshatriya incarnation as Prithu Maharaj is trying to kill her also. So she said, it's little surprising. How could you know like that? So Earth is arguing like this. Your progeny were my children, situated in my lap, and I nourish them with milk. Seeing their evil ways, I have not supplied milk to rectify them. You, the master of the house, are now trying to punish me for this. For example, mother and father maintain the children. When the child does some mischief, mother has the authority to punish them, to rectify them. But just because mother punished the child, father cannot banish the mother or father cannot kill the mother.
Right.
So father should respect the authority that mother also has on the child. That is her argument. Because so far, what's happening was, so far this this earth was ruled by demoniac king like Vena. Sacrifices are not being conducted only. People are not behaving in proper ways. Thieves and rogues were becoming prominent. So for that reason, she held back the grains for a while, just so that they will understand. So that is her argument. But it's not that I am disinclined to give grains to me, to you. I am willing to give all the grains and natural commodities that you want. So please take it. Don't become unnecessarily angry. So then when she made this proposal, Prithu Maharaj became pleased and then she accepted. He accepted her proposal. That we will discuss after lunch. Okay. Thank you all very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.